This is the beginning of class 9.
Sanshi Bhagi Jushinne Tosham Rira Vinshi Nyande Yampati Sange Shindu Mitte Uwagi Jogo Nanda Shiva
to find a good teacher and behave correctly towards that teacher.
Yeah. Can I ask a question, a little slightly unrelated? Is it okay to mark up Dharma texts?
Preferred not to.
Preferred not to.
Not supposed to.
Okay.
I always tell people you can write on the back of the next page. If you have this notebook open and you have the text on one side, you can write on the back of the page before, actually.
Mm.
That's a good way to get around it. I write on books that I know I'm going to reprint shortly, or translate, because I figure it's just, you know, but Rinpoche doesn't like it, and it's not good. So, don't do it.
Okay.
Also, these materials, someday you might want to xerox and give to your students, hopefully, so try to keep it clean. You ever sat there right out? Mm-hmm. Anybody not get a stomach chart? Anybody else got one? Maybe someday in April we'll go through that chart. It has all the 5 problems, the 8 corrections, and the 9 states of mind. That's what the chart is all about. That's it. All that's on the chart, actually. So you learn it later. So it was how to find what makes a good lama, and then how you should behave towards him. And the main way to please any lama is supposed to be that you actually put into practice what he teaches you. So if he sees you doing what he described, then that's supposed to be the highest offering you can give him. It's called Drupe Chuva, the offering of your practice. And I warn you, you know, you are new, mostly new students. You are very fresh. You're learning these things for the first time. After you hear them the second or third time, they won't make much impression on you. You'll say, I heard that before. The normal reaction is that. And I have a few students who are like, they just want to know the next 10 vocabulary words. You know, and I feel kind of bad sometimes, and I think maybe it's not. I worry about teaching them too much because they're not really. I don't feel that they have any great intention to put into practice. It's more like collecting more knowledge, you know, and that's a very great danger. So while you're fresh, put it into some kind of lifetime practice as far as you can, as much as you can, try to put it into some kind of practice immediately. If you don't, that phenomenon psychologically is described in Buddhist literature as called trepto. Trepto means it's what that dog gets when you hit him all the time, and after a while he doesn't care. Go ahead, beat me. I'll go ahead and bark. It's like inured or hardened or insensitive to Dharma anymore. There's a step like that. So try to put it into practice. I would hate to be a party or participate in making Dharma monsters who know everything and everybody around them thinks they're the most, not bad person, but just a pain in the butt person, you know. You know, okay, I know, yeah, you know, they want to tell you everything and they're not happy and they make you unhappy, you know. And I pray, I mean, it should be going the opposite way. And that's the best way to serve your Lama. You know, if the Lama hears that you had a fight with people at work or you're not getting along with people or people... I don't mean that everyone has to like you, because they might not. But in general, I think a Dharma person who's improving is getting along more with the people around him than he did before. And he's happier. And because he's happier, people around him feel it, and then they respond to that. And normally that's what's happening when you meet those people who meet the Dharma and start trying to change themselves immediately. People around them notice it. And not because they say, hey, you know, I know about emptiness, listen to this, you know. It's more like they just start being more considerate of other people and more happy to help other people. And those are good signs. You know, if that's going on because of these classes, then you're repaying the teacher what he wants. You know, that's the. And if you're getting you're repaying the teacher what he wants. You know, that's the. And if you're getting more insensitive or more knowledgeable and more cold, you know, then. It's a failure, you know. The teacher has failed, and you failed. So, it's a failure, you know. The teacher has failed, and you failed. So, that's the sign. The main sign is that you're getting happier. If your happiness level is increasing, then you are repaying the teacher properly. You know what I mean? And that's a pleasant payment to have to pay. Okay. So we had how to find a teacher and how to behave around the teacher, and then we had how to practice once you've found the teacher, how to purify your mind. That second part has two parts. Galupa's love outlines, as you may have noticed. it organizes your thinking, and you can do a shargam on it, right? If you don't have an outline, you can't do a shargam. You can't do a review meditation. That's what outlines are for.
Random access review.
All right. So, inside that second one, there's two parts. And the first one is this.
This is how to practice, right?
Yeah. How to practice.
Number three.
And the word in Tibetan means how to practice and how to purify your mind. It's the same word. It's called jangba. So jangba can mean to practice, or it can also mean to purify yourself. It's the same word. I don't know. It's hard to translate into English. Lembar means get or take. And guwa means urge. And rrr means to. Go backwards. You see? In Tibetan word order is reversed from English. Okay? It's like Japanese. Urge to take the essence. This is the part in the text where the Lama Tsongkhapa is urging you to get the essence out of your life. Take the essence out of this life that you've found. And we'll talk more about it. Okay. Take the essence. The first part is the Lama in Tsongkhapa in his text is telling you, look, you have to get some essential meaning out of your life. You have to try to use this precious life to do something important before you die. And then the second one is, so you say, well, how do I do that? And then he's going to explain how to take the essence out of this life, how to get the essence out of this.
So, like, meaning to make the best of this life.
Yeah. Dharmic best.
Yeah.
All right. And the root text at this point says, which means it's in your translation, but means you can only find it one time. Means this kind of life, this kind of body. Shintunyeka means extremely difficult to find this kind of life. Dunchen Shigyunye means you should realize that it's very precious. So it means like that. Is it true that you can only find this kind of life once? You know, as a human being, as you know, having a good brain, not being handicapped, meeting a teacher, having the interest to learn, having enough motivation to get up in the morning and meditate. Is it true that you only get this kind of life once?
Huh?
Well,
we
I'll give you a clue.
Again, we might
I'll
not,
give you a clue.
You know?
If it's true that you have one past life, then, and if the proof of that is that the past life caused this life, then how many past lives do you have?
Countless,
but
I'm saying we don't know if we're going to get another chance to be human again.
Well, infinite odds in the past and how many in the future if you don't get out of this life. Infinite. So out of infinite, you know, if you picked up the lottery ticket every day for a trillion, billion, million years, would you win? Mm-hmm. I mean, probably. I mean, the odds are in your favor if you pick infinite number of lottery tickets that you'll win.
Eventually.
You have to win eventually, actually. So is it true that you're only going to find this kind of life once? It's not technically true.
That's rare.
But Tsongkhapa, in his commentary on Avogadro's guide, is like, well, why did Tsongkhapa say you only find it once? I mean, the odds against it are so vast, are so incredible, that it might as well be once. The odds against it are vast.
So what are you saying, Michael?
What I'm saying is that the probability of your...
You're not going to come back in this life again, at least?
No. The probability of your going up to this human state, the probability of you having enough good in you to be a human is infinitely small. It's infinitely small. Because in 1 5-minute period... don't forget how many thoughts you're thinking during a few minute period. You are thinking, I don't know, a couple of hundred, maybe. Your mind goes through a few hundred thoughts in 10 minutes, probably. And the vast majority are some kind of non-virtuous thoughts. I mean, it's not that you're an evil, you're not a Hitler. You know, you're not a Saddam Hussein or whatever. But the vast majority of your thoughts are motivated for your own gain. And they're not at all aimed at helping other people. And you're not a bad person, you know. You're a normal person. And you're taking care of your needs. And much of those thoughts are non-virtuous. And these small unpleasant thoughts that come up towards other people all through the day outnumber the charitable or virtuous thoughts by like thousands to one. And you're not a bad person, and you're not. It's not like you're going out and killing people. Just all during the day, you're thinking, how do I get fed? You know, how am I going to get to feel good this afternoon? You know, how am I better get this presentation done better than so and so? You know, and it's not evil. It's just a normal competition that human beings go through, and that's non-virtuous. So the odds of that's lack of knowledge, and that's why wisdom is so important. Wisdom means knowledge.
Lack of knowledge generates stupid thoughts about other people.
What I mean is, if you knew better, you wouldn't do it. And that's the whole idea of Buddhist education. That's the whole idea of learning Buddhism.
Is it caused by past karma?
Yeah, partly. The habit of thinking that way is one of the four karmic results. So that's why wisdom is so important. Knowledge has to overcome your instincts. And that's very difficult. It's very unlikely that you'll be able to do that. So.
Yeah, but Mike, what happens so when you do, you know, you do, you say prayers, you do purification practices, you do some good deeds. I mean, you sound like, you know, we only do bad things.
Well, very rare, but I. Those
no,
are good deeds.
Not true.
But if you
why
had told me,
that?
If you had not mentioned your prayers, but if you had said, look, when I went to work today during the whole day, my only motivation was to see that everyone else around me got ahead. And the money I intended to take as little as I could to live, and I was going to donate the rest to poor people. And, you know, that would be a virtuous way to live. We don't. We can't right now. We don't have that capability.
But you're talking in totalities. It's like, okay, you're doing this, you know, you're thinking of yourself. Okay, you're doing some things for other people. You admit that, but it's not going to be enough.
What I'm saying is
yourself to everybody.
The ones that you do for others and the ones that you do for yourself are just innumerable for yourself. You know, every moment of your waking day, even in your dreams, you are trying to take care of yourself first and get ahead. And you don't. It's not like you're going to hurt somebody at work or put poison in their tea or something. Or, you know, but you have this natural desire that you become the star of the office, and that you are happy all day. And if you see someone who's not happy, you're not as worried about that as you are about whether if you have a headache. You see, it's just human nature, and that nature will cause us. It makes it very unlikely that we'll be born in this kind of birth again. What it also means by implication is that your past life was able to overcome those thoughts. So you have a nice, powerful seed. You know, your last life was able to be pretty damn good.
Yeah, but you're talking about karma. How much karma are you putting in these little things that are not so harmful to other people? And what about the good karmic actions? Those answers supposed to be more powerful? Than just, you know, being a little bit apathetic, let's say?
Several things make karma more powerful. One is the object towards which you do it. If you hurt the Dalai Lama or if you hurt Joe Schmo, it's a much worse deed to hurt the Dalai Lama. But
even if you're not conscious,
if you repeat something constantly, that's also a second way to build up the strength of that karma. To do a small bad deed continually is as strong as doing a single great bad deed once. It's the same power. So.
Are we going to want to know how karma, measure
coming,
karma?
Okay, so it is kind of like a one-time thing that we are in this opportunity. What does it mean, opportunity? You should write this down. We have, we call 10 fortunes and 8 opportunities. Sometimes they call leisure, I should say. I think this guy translated it as, 10 fortune, 8 leisures. I translated it differently. Leisure sort of means what? Leisure time means what?
Relax.
Time to relax, time to be idle. I don't much like that. The Tibetan word comes from the root slow. but it's defined as a lack of opportunity. So I'll say lack of opportunity. Lax. Let's call it the 8 ways. 8 ways.
8 freedoms?
You could say that, but let's list them and then you tell me a better translation.
impediments?
No, because there's other... You see, when you try to translate Buddhism, you have to know every other word. There's already a list of impediments, and it's a different word. You know, you just have to know everything before you can translate one thing. You not only have to know what it is, you have to know what it's not. And that's very difficult.
Isn't this negative?
Yeah, it is defined as mikombage. Mikombage. Mikombage means what most people have, not having opportunity. And this is mikombage maimba. It's a double negative. I'm sorry, I should have put not. Sorry.
Yeah.
You're right. So what they normally do is they list the eight ways of lacking opportunity. And then they say the leisures are the opposite.
Why don't you say
okay, that's why.
Why don't you just call it eight opportunities?
They define it as a double negative. It's not having those eight problems. What are those eight problems? Wrong views. Which of the non-virtues is that of the ten? It's the last one. Why? And by the way, they get worse as you go up. Why is it the worst one? What's the biggest wrong view? What's the most terrible wrong view, karmically?
Don't believe in karma.
Don't believe in karma. You don't believe that something will come back to you. But then what will happen? With reference to the other nine.
Do all the others.
You won't worry about it. It's pretty amazing if you think about the inner morality of mankind around the world. I mean, basically, it's recognized around the world that it's bad to kill someone, you know, or to lie, or to steal.
To a certain political point.
Yeah. But why not if you can get away with it? If there's some certainty that you can get away with it, or if there's an absolute certainty that you can get away with it, why don't people do it more often? You see, something stops us. It's a strange good thing. Logically speaking, I mean, if someone bothered you, you would just find a way to meet him in a dark alley and kill him. Yeah, I know. I'm sure there are, but are the majority of mankind in our present day, it's felt that that's not correct. And there's nothing holding you back. He would just be eliminated. I mean, there's places in China where they just used to be the case. You know, if the minister is not following the policies, you just arrange an airplane accident. And why not? It's logical. If you're not going to get caught, why do people stop? Why don't people do it? It's a nice thing. It's a good thing. They probably do it out of some habit or social habit.
Your mama told them to. Yeah.
It's basically that. You didn't grow up that way. There are countries where you do grow up. I mean, Genghis Khan was a product of that. Where he grew up, it was considered... His father was poisoned during a dinner that someone threw for him, and they tried to kill him, and he and his mother hid out in the woods, and he became crazy. And so there are places like that. So what we don't have those wrong views. Is blissful ignorance a wrong view? It's close, I would say. You know, most people don't kill their people who irritate them slightly, just out of habit or social custom. I would say it's not out of understanding that if they killed the person, they would be killed many times.
So you're saying that's a wrong view too?
It's a kind of wrong view. Yeah.
Well, in the West, we've tended to assume...
It's a correct action with the wrong reason.
We've tended to assume that there's an unnatural and psychologically unhealthy attitude involved in wanting to harm others.
Yeah, it's been
Whereas in other cultures, that's not true at all.
Yeah, it's a very wonderful thing about our culture. I mean, our culture has a lot of good things that we don't notice because we're here.
Just interject one thing about, you know, doing negativities. I was recently in a thing where someone said they've done neurological studies now where they study biochemistry. Mm-hmm. Like one big negative thought, like watching someone be killed on a movie or television, they can measure now in your bloodstream the chemical imbalance lasts for like 30 days. That one of that.
Kids must get it.
some notes on that study.
Actually, I'm going to change this, okay? This is the list. And that's how they present it. That's how we're supposed to present it. And then at the end you say, you know, you don't have these things.
When
they talk about leisure and fortune.
How does an animal accrue positive karma?
It's a great question. It's a very good question. And the perception of animals by Westerners and the reality of the animal realm are two different things. We kind of see them as kind of cute and, you know, mommy cows are licking their baby cows. And, you know, dolphins have been known to help people come up to shore. And, you know, it's a neat... But the Buddhist description of how an animal lives is in total, constant terror and looking over their shoulder. Because any moment they could be eaten by another animal. Every moment of their life is spent in concern about danger, and they have no intellectual equipment to do much about it except react in an animal way. So they say the animal realm is one long bad dream. That you know, you pet dogs okay, but I mean the vast majority of animals, meaning insects also, creatures in the ocean, they are. Their life it revolves around not getting eaten by another animal, not getting killed by another animal, and trying to kill the littler ones. And it really is. It's a food chain, and that's the Buddhist description of the animal realm. And how you get out of it, total sheer accident. You know, maybe you get killed early in your lifespan, and you wear off the bad karma of having hurt someone. You see. There are stories of flies that land on cow pies that get washed down hillsides and circle around a temple one time. Seriously.
Why is that circumambulating? No
intention. No motivation.
Why is circumambulating?
The place is holy.
But what is that
just
mean?
To be around the place. Yeah. Just to be near the
what
place.
What about, again?
Pleases a high lama. The Dalai Lama has a lap dog. You know, just... It's not because of any... thing intentional by the person or the animal. It's by the vast power of the person he's pleasing.
So energetically he soaks up that energy basically?
Yeah, it's one way to create a powerful karma.
Well, what about karma?
And they say that you and I are probably here by the same reason. You know, like for some reason we pleased the great Lama. You know, it wasn't that we in our past life were so smart as to do something. So many good things that we were here, but maybe we, you know, gas station attendant, the Dalai Lama car, and we thought, boy, he looks great. And so really, something like that. Something very powerful reached us, and we did something good by accident towards him. That's the power of the object creates the karma. Okay, so that's born as an animal.
Michael, what happens to karma? What about the fact that you have to live your karma? I mean,
how do you mean? What do you mean you have to?
You know, you say it by sheer accident, but what about the fact that you know, because you're in the animal realm, you have eaten other animals, and you accumulate the karma. I mean,
you do. Yeah, so that's why Marx said, "Well, how the heck do you get out of the animal realm? It's very rare, extremely rare." They said if you threw an inner tube in the ocean, and there was a blind turtle living at the bottom. And every 500 years he came up for breath. And he stuck his head up to the inner tube. It would be about that frequent. Something like that. That's serious. That is the odds. That's why I believe euthanasia is a stupid idea. The odds of going down are infinite. The odds of suffering badly the second after you die are extremely great. My father was dying.
Going down or infinite? So are the odds of going up, Michael?
Infinitely, no.
We're talking about infinity.
No, but the ratio of bad thoughts to good thoughts in your present mind is...
But then you do exhaust negative karma.
If you didn't, you'd never be here.
Yeah.
Just by suffering, you exhaust it. You wear it out.
But Michael, what's to say that a person... I mean, you're saying that's an argument against euthanasia, but then, you know, how would their mind necessarily improve over the month or two that they might...
What I'm saying is, my father was dying, and he was terminal, and we had a meeting, you know, we tell him he's doing good, and we go in a room and say, well, should we kill him or not? And, I mean, not kill him, but should we turn off everything? And I said, but if you think about it, the odds are supposed to be quite great that we will go down into worse suffering, much worse suffering than the worst suffering you can imagine here.
That he would.
That any given person would. I can't judge him. I have no idea.
But the odds wouldn't change, really, whether...
Oh, no, but it would happen later instead of now.
Right.
I mean, so if you have a choice between throwing your father into a fire pit now or waiting a couple of hours to throw him in...
There's carnage going on.
Which would you do? You see what I mean? If you could delay it for a month, would you do that? Would it be worth it?
Yeah, but not because it would change his odds.
No.
But
I think we're talking
no,
about
that. It won't change it. But you got a choice between pushing him in now or pushing him in later. Sit. Let him have some time out of it.
Michael, what about the karma of...
It's a very... To me, and I don't expect you to accept it, okay? But to me, with my knowledge of the scriptures, it's crazy to talk about euthanasia because that person will probably go to hell. Most likely, we are going to go to hell. So,
the person who does it to the person.
Anyone who dies.
Yeah.
Any human being who dies. The odds are supposed to be very, very great that we will go down to great suffering. So don't kill him. I mean, let him live some a few months of this life. It's better.
Is that really true? I mean, I have like a question. Like,
no, the dude. Can I? Is it my present project to convince you of it? No.
I'm not even talking about that. But, I mean, you know, this is really bloodshed.
Yeah.
What should we do?
I'll take care of it.
It's very like, okay, you're going to, you know,
the
best people are going to die, are going to go to hell and all of this. And it's kind of like, even you're talking about by chance having to do something good for the Dalai Lama that gives you great virtue. Okay, well, what about, you know, the people in the room who come to classes or try to do something? I mean, what kind of karma? I mean, it seems like an imbalance. It seems like, you know, what Nina was saying, like, you know, the slightest small bad thought you have is terrible because it's going to accumulate over time. And, well, what about all the good things that you try to do, even though they're not... Even though you're not a perfect practitioner, whatever. I mean, at what point do you start to climb the ladder of getting out of hell in your next life? I mean, because it's always like you're gonna go to hell. You practice this, you're gonna, you know, you do it wrong, you're gonna go to hell.
It's not like the Christian thing, right? You know, you gotta go to hell, you gotta go to hell.
It's just like the odds. It's true that these are not. Scare you into working hard.
No, not like that. It's not meant to scare you. It's the truth. It really is.
So then at what point?
The Kadampa Geshe.
What kind of karma do you get out of just sitting and listening and trying to absorb what you can? I mean, do you get any karma?
Excellent karma. The Kadampas used to sit with a bag of black rocks and white rocks. And they Kadampas sat in caves. All they did was think about. Then every time they had a bad thought, they'd take out a black rock and put it on the left side. And then every time they had a good thought, they'd take out a white rock and put it on the right side. And they would spend their meditations like that. You know, every time they had a good thought, they would take out the white rock and put it on this side. And they actually did that. And then at the end of the day, they would look, you know, the two piles. And if the black pile is bigger, you're probably going to have a bad result.
I mean, it's like the seed thing. I know what you're saying. You're the hand reaching over your back to pick out the black one seed or the white seed for your next life. But is there anything that overcomes that? Is there any virtue that you get just by hearing it that maybe it's, you know what I'm saying? By
what's the point at which you actually...
I mean, what...
Knowledge.
I mean, is it only the result of the situations that you put yourself in? Is it only how much you've absorbed... You know, all of this, or if you tried, I mean, is there anything with the motivation and what you can do?
Oh, no, trying is, trying counts, but it's absolutely ungodly in the sense that there's no idea of pity or sympathy or mercy or
redemption.
It's you, forgiveness. Whatever you do, you will get the result. You know, and there's no, it's just a like gravity. It's a law.
It's a numbers game.
It's the way it works.
And
you know, I suffer. I have really bad times. I have chaotic times. And I feel like, well, I've been trying so hard, you know, and I've been trying to do everything right, you know, all these years, and you feel like there's no justice or something. And then you can't, if you understand emptiness, you cannot deny that this is how I will perceive things. And when I commit a bad deed now, it's with the knowledge that I must perceive some suffering in the future because of that deed. And it's just when the knowledge gets heavier than the habit. And that's, and they say that comes to learning in a class or through a book from in a qualified situation, thinking about it and then trying to change. Yeah, that is the process.
So it really is only the result then. It really doesn't, you know, it's
no,
how much it affects you in terms of how you behave and how you think and how you act. I mean, it really.
Yeah, there's no way out of it.
It's contradictory because if you can circumambulate around a temple and get karma.
No, you can.
But how does that make sense? Because that's why I'm not thinking at that moment.
No, there's four elements to karma. Yeah, intention is only one of them. And karma is very similar to the laws of criminal court. You know, if you kill a man accidentally, you still collect bad karma.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible bad karma.
What are the four elements? Intention?
I was afraid you'd ask me.
Well,
we had a long class on it once in K. Mary's house.
I was on a talk in depth about karma?
Yeah, not in this class, in this class. Basically, you have to have intention to do it. Then you have to prepare to do it. Which means all the actions you take up to the point that you actually do it, which is number three. And then you have to, after you do it, you have to perceive and recognize and not feel regret about doing it. You have to finalize the deed. So it's intention, preparation, commission, and finalizing it. And those all four have to be present to complete what's called a complete legi lam, a karmic path, which is in the fourth chapter of the Abhidhamma Kosha. And you can do anything. You can have the mushi if you kill someone by accident. But you don't have the other three. You didn't want to, you didn't prepare to, and you weren't glad that you did it. And you can have other things can go on like that. For example, if you try to shoot Reagan and you hit Brady instead, part of the mushi is not there. You did have preparation. You did have motivation. You didn't actually kill Reagan. No mushy complete. And afterwards, you didn't. If you thought you killed him, you have finalization. Okay. So that's a long. We can't do it, or you won't get home.
Michael,
is it meant to scare you? No. Is it true? Yes. The truth of it can free you. The truth of it can. The truth of it. You don't have to take it negatively. You can say, the truth of it is, whatever I make myself, I will have to experience that result. Mm-hmm. So you can take it as a positive thing. You know, you can take it as, well, that means if I truly try to serve humanity, I cannot experience a bad result. Even though at times that will fail because of my past karma.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I truly try to serve the people around me, truly try to care and love the people around me, there's no way I can have a bad result. Mm-hmm. Even though you will have failures in the actual attempts to care for people because of your past karma.
And also, because maybe you won't necessarily know what it is that's caring for them, because you might be thinking you're doing something good for them, but you might be doing something really
that's
bad.
That's where you wouldn't have a mushy.
Michael,
what's
that? I have a question.
Which one's that?
This old argument that, you know, maybe the kid you're helping will be the Hitler 20 years from now, you know.
Or maybe they
can't live like that. You can't do that. I mean, you have to do what's best according to your present knowledge. You have to help them as much as
you can. So you might be doing something bad.
You might be, but that's not a reason not to do it. It's illogical not to do it because of that. Well, what you should do is kill the person in case he's the next Hitler.
Well, no, but I mean, like, should you go around giving money to every single beggar on the street because they need money? I don't know.
What if the next beggar you met on the street was your mother and she had a disguise on? What would you do? What if you found your mother on the street?
That's what I mean. I don't know. Whether sometimes you give money to beggars on the street and they're just complete lazy bums and they want to go and buy alcohol and you're not helping them. Sometimes it might be your mother and she's really in distress.
But what if you really met your mother on the street and she asked you for help?
Well, what's help, though? Is it helping?
What would you
them?
Do for them?
Is it sometimes it's helping someone to make them go through a hard time, and sometimes it's helping them to get them over it?
Like, oh, no, you've got to be common sense also. I mean, if the guy looks like he's alcoholic, he's asking you for money, and you give him a roll and he throws it in the garbage, which I've seen on this corner.
Yeah, but if you bought him a bottle of wine, you do him a favor.
It's all four.
Motivation is most important. Okay, we got to go on or you'll be here all night. Craving spirit. Craving spirits you can't see. Buddhism says they exist. They're used as an example of something that we can't prove.
Is that hungry
ghost? Yeah, what you call hungry ghost. Shoo.
We can't prove. Do you mean through Buddhist logic you can't prove?
Probably ultimately I could, but I can't. I don't ask you to believe that these things exist, because I can't show you one right now. They do. And how we prove them is another story. But you haven't. That hasn't happened to you. They are supposed to be ghost-like, spirit-like beings that we can't see with our normal vision, that exist around us, and because of their greed in their past life, they're born in some kind of suffering state where even if they see a nice cup of tea and they're dying of thirst, to them it looks like blood, or it looks like pus, something like that. And we studied it in emptiness. We studied it in Majjhimika, and it's a long story. Okay, why that's possible. I don't ask you to accept it if you don't. Don't worry about it. Very virtuous.
Here.
Very, very, very virtuous.
But as perhaps a human?
Yeah, most likely. Human realm is the best realm in which to do something good. The higher realms, if they exist, and I can't show you them, they're having such a good time that they aren't doing anything good. They're just using up their past good. Normally when you're having too good of a time, you're not too worried about doing something to fix it.
That was saying when you use your good karmas, godly realms, that you go to the hells. Is it possible to use part of it in the form of human birth?
Yeah, it is. It is possible. The Buddha does teach in those realms. Supposed to be.
Oh.
Born in hell. It's a very bad realm for teaching because nobody wants to listen much. You're having a good time. Why care? Born in hell. Buddhism, this is third chapter of the Abhidharma mainly, describes a hot hell and a cold hell. There's no pain on earth which is as painful as the slightest pain in those places. There are other minor hells around it where you are slashed or smashed or beaten. And time slows down in hell. So one day in hell could be equal to hundreds of years, thousands of years in the human realm, perceptually. You feel the pain a lot more.
It's equivalent to a very long rebirth, is what you're saying?
Yeah, time-wise, it feels like a very long time. And it is. It is a long time, and it feels even longer. Okay, you perceive it as being even longer. Can't prove to you that they exist. They are extremely similar to the descriptions by Dante and other people. I mean, almost the same. Can't prove to you that they exist. If you study emptiness for a long time, and then you study karma for a long time, I think you could establish them through logic, but you'd have to work on that for a while. 99% of humans supposedly go there. Or more. You know, and I don't ask you to believe it. Study. You'll study for a long time. You don't have to. I'm not trying to say anything that's not in the scripture. That's what it says. Is it true? Should you accept it now? Just consider it. You know, it's in the scripture. Consider it a point that you'd like to do Che Gom about. Chego means I'm going to analyze this and check out whether it's true or not as I gain more data.
Preferably not the first time.
No teachings. You're born in a place where nobody ever heard of Buddhism, and no teachers, no books, no tradition, no nothing.
Detroit.
No, I would say, you know, to be born in America is... I would say the teachings are here in the sense... I mean, according to Buddhism, it's interesting. It's in the 8th chapter of the Abhisamayalankara. For example, if someone is teaching that you shouldn't kill, that teaching is the activity of the Buddha. You know, if a Christian minister is getting up in the pulpit and saying you shouldn't kill other people, that's the activity of the Buddha.
But he's not a Buddha. What do you mean?
Not saying that, but it's the...
It's Buddhist teaching.
That's Buddhist activity. That is the activity of the Buddha.
So it could be any teaching of morality.
Is it complete? No. Will it work by itself? No.
But Michael, here you're referring to no Buddhist.
Is it
no
the activity
teaching?
Of Buddha? Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean teach. no Buddhist
like,
teachings.
Okay, not, you know, because we do have Christianism and Judaism, whatever all these religions are teaching, not killing. That, you're not referring to that, though. Yeah, no,
I'd say they're very, very close. Technically speaking, they're not the teaching of the Buddha. Okay. Technically speaking, they are the activity of the Buddha. They are virtuous, they are good. Is it Buddhism? Technically, if it doesn't have Lam Tsu Nam Sum, those three ideas in it, it's not pure Buddhism. If it doesn't teach disgust with this life, bodhicitta, or some kind of compassion, and lack of a self, no. But it's, I'd say if you're born in a country where they're teaching the Ten Commandments, it's a very nice situation, you know, it's a good situation. That's nice, very good. Okay, no.
He's probably discriminating from karma because he's listening to the teaching.
We say that, yeah.
Even though
he's collecting bad karma from that. You're constantly collecting black and white karma together. You see? You never really purely one or the other in your normal state of mind. Almost everything we do is mixed. And there is that principle. Uncivilized, that's what they call it, lalo, and it means nobody is keeping the 8 types of bad morality. That custom has not reached that country, and it's not considered civilization. That's why it's when the monks are holding their confession ceremony every 2 weeks, when there's enough monks to hold that ceremony, which can be 4 or 5, then they say Buddhism has reached that country. So it's very nice. We have I think it's the only sojourn going on in this country. It's down in New Jersey every two weeks. So they say that's if...
Namgyal.
And Namgyal too. So I'm two now. So if those vow moralities, if those 8 types of vows are being kept by anyone in that area, that's civilization.
What are the nuns, Michael?
They are four of the 8.
You say monks. What about nuns?
No, same thing. Kenyan, Kenyama, Kenyan, Getsuma.
There's more than 2 then, Michael.
Oh, no, they have to be doing this special ceremony together. You can do it. A certain number of nuns can do it.
What are the 8 bad moralities?
Excuse me?
What are the 8 moralities?
Which means... Nyene means one-day vow, one-day layman's vow, lifetime layman's vow for man, lifetime layman's vow for a woman, novice man, novice woman, intermediate woman, full nun, and full monk. Is that it? You don't need to know. Later. We're going to study that. That's one of your 5 books. Okay. 7 is, it means you're born as a human, but you can't receive the teachings. You can't practice them. Something wrong with you physically or something wrong with you mentally. you don't have the, you don't have to be a genius, you know. I mean, this is referring to people who are just too retarded that someone can explain to them why they shouldn't kill somebody, why they shouldn't steal. It's a sensual paradise, mostly, except in the formless mode.
What if your karma was good and you were born as a pleasure being? You're being born in a place where it's a dead end for moving any further. Yeah. It seemed like you'd be able to be reborn in a situation where you could complete the path.
Yeah, they say bodhisattvas feel like to be born in that place. It's like they must be born in hell. They said they treat it as a very disastrous birth.
Well, don't you also
want to... you're too happy.
Well, then once you exhaust your positive karma, you go way down, don't
it's
you?
The flow chart from those realms is to the hell.
Sure.
There's a tiny little side thought to the human realm. The vast, almost all people in the pleasure realms must fall down because they totally use up their good karma just by being there.
So it's not good to have some good karma. You need to sort of go past
if
the
you do
other
dedication, if you do dedication, your karma doesn't get blown out on waste. You don't spend your poker chips on something useless. Okay. That's what dedication is for.
So it should be pleasure based.
Yeah, why is it not?
I'm sorry. Oh, you're right. I've been messing you up today. I had a hard day.
Could you explain pleasure being here? I don't
understand. Yeah. Would you like to turn on that?
Oh.
I think. Yeah. Can you put it on?
Sure.
Excuse me.
Yes. I'm listening.
Karma, the one thing that the one sort of objection I keep coming up with is that where does purification fit in? We hear a great deal about purification. There are purification practices. You're supposed to be able to purify your negative karma. If that's the case, you're doing purification practices on a regular basis. How are you accumulating so much bad karma that you're going to end up in hell?
No, if you're doing purification properly, you won't.
That's an important qualification, especially in answer to faith, you know.
No, it is. But what does it mean to be doing purification properly? What's the result of that purification?
Well, theoretically, the result is developing an entirely, let's put it this way, taking another step, you know, attitudinally in terms of your spiritual development.
Yeah, like pretty much avoiding doing that kind of thing again.
Well, it's a process.
Yeah, I mean, in stages, but taking a big leap towards not doing that sort of activity again as a result of a single day's purification ceremony or over a few months, say, that you start to eradicate that behavior in yourself. And what I'm saying is that, I mean, the vast majority of us who do purification practices do them without much fervor and without much resolve, and then we just cruise on. And in that case, you haven't completed a purification practice. So
what's the part where you do purification?
I mean, we went through the four powers, right? And that's a long story. That would be a whole class in itself. But basically, to understand why it's wrong, and then to clean it out. Make some battle plan, some, what do you call it? Business, they have some nice plans. Action plan.
What?
Action plan, not to do it again. Or at least to cut it down, and that, you know, so that, okay, it's 4 days until you do it again rather than 3 days. And if you keep doing that, purification takes hold because that's, you're not doing it anymore after a while. I don't say after the first purification. If you're doing a wimpy purification ceremony, yet the results will be wimpy and the purification will be wimpy. It's not just enough to sit down and recite Vajrasattva or something. It doesn't. That's not purification. It doesn't work.
The purification is a confession.
Four powers. Yeah. my Lama prefers the word purification to confession. Although, if you understand what confession means in Buddhism, then that's, you know, you can use any word you want.
Could you explain what the eight ways of lacking opportunity, what does that mean?
Those are eight lousy situations you could be in where you don't have any opportunity to practice. And you don't have those eight. You got out of those eight.
Yeah.
And that's the definition of what most people translate as leisure. Opportunity.
So this doesn't go back to the opposite take the of, essence or any of that.
What he's saying is, where are we now? What section are we in?
How to practice.
How to practice, and inside of practice, how to practice, what section are we in?
How to take the essence now.
That was the second part, but we didn't get to the first part. What was the first part? He's urging you. He says, do something.
This was part of the first part?
Yeah. That verse is part of the first part where he's saying, look where you are. Look at the rare window of opportunity you have. Do something. Okay. Do something with it. Okay.
Smell some gas.
I think the gas stove is on.
Excuse me?
You have to do it. Like a lid.
Use a plate.
It's a stove lid.
It's fine. Yeah, it's a lid. Supposed to be very good to be born as a human because you've got just the right spice of suffering and time. Okay, just the right mix of suffering and times when you're not suffering. It means that enough screwy things happen during the day that you get sick of life and you try to reach some spiritual state beyond this. But not so much pain as in the hell that you're incapable of framing a thought, a straight thought. People in hell can't practice Dharma because they can never frame a thought beyond the emotion of suffering and pain. They can't think a straight thought. They're incapable of thinking a straight thought. Mm-hmm. So we have a nice dose of suffering, but we also have periods of lucidity to do something about it.
Yeah. Is born as a human part of urge to take the essence?
Yeah, we're still talking about that. Yeah, we're explaining why it's such a precious opportunity. These are going to be positive. This is the same as what we talked about before, the opposite of what we talked about before. You could say civilized man. What's that mean? What's that?
It's
most people, most books, I don't think they... Maybe there is a scripture that says it. It doesn't mean where teachings are. It means specifically where someone is keeping one of the eight kinds of vowed morality. There's a difference between not killing because you don't feel like it and not killing because you took a lifetime vow not to do it.
You just need one person?
Yep. Technically, good question. According to tradition, you need enough monks or nuns to do it. Faculties intact means you can hear, you can see, you can think. You know, you meet... I remember my younger brother. He was a very bad student for many years in school, and then they figured out he couldn't see the blackboard, you know, and they gave him eyeglasses, and then he was okay. So it's like that. I mean, if you have one of those severe problems that prevent you from learning Buddhism, that's the faculties not intact. So we have our faculties intact. We will lose them. Everyone does. I mean, that's the window of opportunity. It's shutting. It opens and it shuts. And you will lose your hearing, you will lose your sight. You won't be able to taste things properly. You won't be able to think straight. So you have to do it now. You have to do something now. The big five are killing your father. Killing your mother. Trying to hurt the Buddha. Because you can't. Okay. Killing an arhat. Killing an arhat. Gacham Sepa. Kill someone who's reached nirvana. And try to split up the monks. Actually, split up the monks. Succeed in splitting up the monks during the Buddha's time, while the Buddha is present on the earth.
What does that mean?
What do you mean it's not bad?
It means we can't do a full-fledged number five of the big five now. Good luck. Okay? It's impossible for any of us to commit number five in 1994.
How do you know? Trust to split monks?
No, I mean, the traditional occurrence of the Buddha in his traditional form, who collects together a bunch of monks, and then someone comes in while the Buddha's away and manages to break them into two groups that don't get along with
each
other.
So this isn't the same.
That's number five, and you can't do it. You can only do four of the...
In fact, you can't. Formal name of
can't hurt the Buddha.
You can't hurt the Buddha.
What is the title of these five?
Sangmengna, which means uninterrupted five. Uninterrupted, that's why I didn't write that. Uninterrupted means there will be no. You won't take any other kind of birth between this life and a birth in the lowest hell. In other words, you could call it immediate sin, immediate bad deed. I'd usually translate it as immediate. Immediate meaning no medium, nothing in between. The moment you die... without taking another birth, you go to the lowest hell. That's from killing your father, killing your mother, or one of those other things. Okay.
We're trying to hurt a Buddha, and
we can't commit two of them right now. In 1994.
Why?
The traditional Buddha in his normal Chokichoku form, you know, in 500 BC, is not here, so we can't try to hurt him, and we can't cause a division of his direct followers during his lifetime. Only one person has ever done it. And he collected that dude. Ooh. What's his name?
Dave.
Feijin. Yeah. I didn't do the big five, and the last one is... Those are the five that relate to you. Now there's five that relate to the outside. Okay. And you'll see why. Okay? Got it?
Are these to be numbered 5 and 5, or 5 and 6 through 10?
You should really treat them. You're correct. It should be 6 through 10. Yeah. You see, the first five are kind of what you did, right? And the second five are conditions of the world that you're in a way, in a sense. Kind of relate to the environment or the outside of you. So in general, this world is a place where a Buddha has come.
So you're
going to... Michael, is there definitely no Buddha here now?
No, you could all be Buddhas. I'm not a Buddha. But as far as I know, you could all be.
But you just said that we can't try to hurt the Buddha.
That's the traditional way of explaining it. And that's why I kept saying, in his traditional form, 500 BC, I mean, in logically speaking, anyone here could be a Buddha, or you could all be Buddhas. I have no idea. I really don't know. I'm not.
You could be disabled.
I could be disabled, but I'm really not. But I'm really not, and I wouldn't lie about it. Really? I think so. Where he's taught, okay?
Which point in the world where he's taught?
Well, I was told otherwise.
What would be the point of him coming to a world and not teaching?
I mean, yeah, it's a good question, actually. It's a good question. But remember the first few weeks of his career as a Buddha, he felt, traditionally the explanation is that he felt that no one could ever understand what he had understood. And he did not teach for 7 weeks.
I thought it had to do with actually this people having to experience the desire to
well, that's another, recognize. That also helps explain why he pretended to die, according to Mahayana, is that he perceived that, well, no one asked him to stay. It's in fact one of the great sins of one of his disciples is that he neglected to ask him to stay, and so he passed. Mm. And that's a long story, and it would take a long time to explain it. I'm really trying to be good about not keeping you too late. Where what he has taught is practice, okay, so they kind of flow from each other, where people actually try to do it. As I mentioned in the last page of the Abhidhamma Kosha, and it's fun because you've been studying for 10 years and you get to the last page and it's kind of neat. What's kind of sad, actually, he says the sun of Buddhism is setting in this planet, and the first thing to go will be the understandings in people's hearts, and then later the books themselves will disappear. So Buddhism within people's hearts will die first,
yeah.
And then later Buddhism, the outer books and things like that, temples and things like that, will disappear. And he gives it, you know, he says it must happen, it will happen, because Buddhism is another living thing which must die. It will die in this world, and it's just a matter of so many years.
When it dies, will something better?
No, no. There'll be a period of blackness.
And then?
So when's
and
when?
That's third chapter of Abhidhamma Kosha. Year number 5.
There's going to be 1,000 Buddhas, no?
Month number 6.
What does this world mean? The Earth?
This Earth. Yeah, the Earth. No, the Earth. This Earth. This planet.
It goes away.
And other planets are working on their own schedule. And that's in the Abhidhamma too.
So then where will people who have good karma go to study?
Other planets.
Born in another planet.
Where there's storms.
According to Abhidhamma, which is correct. It's supposed to be correct.
Is Shambhala mentioned in the Abhidhamma?
No. I made a mistake here. Okay. Scratch that. That would, I guess, Lungdan Tobe Chö Malala means Buddhism as it exists in people's minds and as it exists in the books has not been lost. So he spoke, and what he spoke hasn't been lost yet. We've lost about 99% of what this current Buddha taught, and we know it. We know it from references, and we know it from, you know, you can ask a computer and figure it out. It's actually kind of interesting. You can surf around the computer and figure it out.
Yeah, but if you know it, then didn't you know what the truth was?
Excuse me?
If you know what you lost, then wouldn't you know actually what you're supposed to lose or something?
We don't. We just know the names of the books that are lost. Like in the Abhidhamma Kosha, there's, I think, 7 great books. Most of them are lost.
Oh, okay.
Where what was taught is being practiced, I should say. Yeah, that's true. Or so much that you can't practice, you don't have all the lam rims. As long as you got all the lam rims, things are okay. Meaning the steps, individual steps. And where people who want to practice are physically able to practice, people support them. That's pretty shaky right now. But I would say I would always tell people, if you're in America and you can't make a living, you know, if you can't do something to feed yourself at a minimum level and still not have enough time to practice, I think that mostly you can do it. You know, it's not sure. if your karma is not that, you will have trouble. But the Buddha said, if a person is truly practicing and he can't find anything to eat, I reject the state of Buddhism. I reject my own reality.
Well, he also said that as long as anybody wearing monk's robe.
Well, he said this much of the robe.
They'd never, ever go without food.
Something like that.
So my question.
That was just a pronounce.
What?
He said that they would just simply never, never be without food.
Yeah. Who's trying to practice?
If we know we've lost 99 or whatever percent of the Buddha's teachings, how do we know that what remains is enough to work?
Nagarjuna said so. Chandigirti said so.
Yeah, we've lost a lot since then.
Gunaprabha said so. Tsongkhapa said so.
500 years ago.
Not lost so much that we can't practice the long rims. Enough there for the long rims. As long as the long rims are complete, there's enough.
That's my question. I don't know if it's complete.
Tsongkhapa said so.
My point is that was 500 years ago.
And he's writing based on Nagarjuna. That was 200 AD.
So my question is,
said everything's okay. Between Nagarjuna and Tsongkhapa, something lost, not enough that...
No, I'm talking about between Tsongkhapa and now.
Oh, no. No, I can just physically, they haven't been lost. Pretty good. I can tell you what's been lost. We have a meeting with Shen tomorrow, Saturday, okay, to give him a list. Okay, have some... To the next division. What's the next
division? Practice.
How to get the most. How to make your life meaningful. How to get something. How to make use of that precious life you finally arranged. So that first part was, he was telling you, look, get your act together. This is very precious. Make some use of it.
Could you repeat that? It was pretty noisy.
Yeah.
And over here I couldn't hear.
Before, in the last verse, which I really should tell you which verse. I don't know the English. This life.
Let me first
realize. Good. All right. That was the verse where he was urging you to do something with your life, to get the most out of this life. And then the next two verses, which are actually one verse, they're eight lines but one thought. They begin how to get the essence out of this life, how to take the most out of this life. And actually learning how to take the essence of a human life is these three steps. It goes in these three steps. So when you're doing your shargong, you'll be going through this. Who's that? Is that it?
Is there a short word for the third point here, that these are the subdivision?
Yeah, how to take the essence. These are the divisions of how to take the essence.
This is not a division of request for help in practice.
That comes much, much later.
But we're still in.
We're still in.
Have to practice and purify the mind.
Yeah, we're still in number two. Good question.
Verse 3.
You didn't catch your question. You're lost. She said, well, are we in, requesting how to get to do something? No, we are still in how to practice, how to purify yourself. And those are the three divisions. And we'll talk about... We don't have much time, so we're going to cover the whole first one in the next 5 minutes. Okay, like this. The whole long room divides into finding a teacher, and then what to do, how to purify yourself after you find a teacher. How to purify yourself after you find a teacher is divided into him urging you to get the most out of life and how to get the most out of life. These are the divisions of how to get the most out of your life. And there'll be three sets of instructions. The first set is what we call for small capacity people. And then medium capacity people, and then great capacity people. Tonight, all we're going to cover is the first. And it's very easy, and there's only two parts.
I'm going to erase that.
Wait.
And what the text at this point says, which means Luso Yo Chuichubushin. Life is like a bubble in the ocean. It's in your text, you don't have it right. Bless me to remember how quickly I'm going to die. And after I die, like my shadow, good and bad karma will follow me. Let me really believe it. And not believe, let me perceive it, that it's true. Let me give up, therefore, any even minor bad deeds, even minor thoughts of not liking someone else. And let me try to collect even those minor good deeds, like being happy that someone at work had a good day. And bless me to get those feelings. Let me be mindful of these things. You know, bless me to keep mindful of these things. That's the whole small capacity person's meditation. And it's very good if you can memorize the text. This is the shortest Lam Rim in existence. It's not much to memorize. Memorize it if you would like to do a good meditation for the next 6 months. Take the time.
Okay. You also bring the fear of rebirth in lower realms?
It's coming. Okay. So we'll talk about two of his concepts tonight. One is death meditation. And we're doing it Friday night. I'll just tell you briefly three things.
You mean tomorrow night?
No. Not tomorrow night.
Next Friday.
Next Friday.
Not next week.
Next Friday.
Not next Friday.
Yeah, next Friday.
Next Friday.
25th, we do have it.
Yeah.
Following Friday, we don't.
No, the following week.
I'll go over the schedule again if you want after class. Okay. Death meditation means you're going to die today. Get up in the morning and say to yourself, I'm going to die tomorrow.
This is on the number one. Is this something?
These are, now I'm not doing a formal outline anymore. I'm just giving you some of the concepts that a small capacity person has to meditate on. And that death meditation has four parts, and that you should know. I'm sorry, three parts. Three parts, only three. Death meditation has three parts. Very simply, the first part is, I must die.
I thought you said we get up and think we're going to die today.
That's actually how you do the death meditation, but there's three parts to it. First is that I must die. You must meditate on that. I must die. No one has ever survived life, right? I must die. Number two is, I have no idea when it will be.
When?
I have no idea when. And third is, when I die, the only thing that can possibly help me is my practice. He's going to die after class. It's definite.
Sure,
I can tell you the time.
By practice, you mean even the good deeds you do every day and things.
Oh,
like
yeah.
That? Okay.
Any good you do will help you. And there's this thing in the Lam Rim, you know, that you're. There's a beautiful meditation, you know. Your relatives start lying to you. Oh, you're going to be all right, you know. And the doctors are saying to the relatives, you're going to die within the next few days. And the doctor's telling you, well, you know, people have survived lung cancer. It's not out of the question, you know. And then the whole process that when you, as you die, I think in the West you would call it the electricity in your mind, but in Buddhism we call it the four elements. And elements, they don't think that there's some little chemical that no one's ever found with a microscope called earth. In the Abhidhamma Kosha, when you get to study the four elements, they're quite scientifically correct. They are kinds of energy. You know, the motility, the fact that things move, is air. The fact that things have solidity, the energy which makes a body solid, is earth. And they are not, they are defined by their functions and not by, you know, there's more dirt in this than water. It's not like that. They're not so stupid. They're actually quite sophisticated. And that what happens when you die is that those four energies start to go wild. And they start to collapse like dominoes. And one triggers the dissolution of the next. And then your mind goes through these hallucinations. They cause the connection between the physical nerves and your mind. As the physical part starts to break down, your mind starts to have hallucinations, terror hallucinations. And so at that point, there's nothing else that can happen that can help you except for an ingrained, deeply ingrained attitudes or deeply ingrained practices that you've done through your life. The rest, anything that's on the surface, shallow, only the deeply ingrained parts of your practice can help you.
Well, what's the quality associated with fire and water?
Fire is the quality of heat, and its functions to ripen things. And water is wetness. Water makes wetness. Wetness and fluidity is water. Fire is heat and the quality of burning. Long story. So what's the natural conclusion if I tell you, look, you've got to die? Secondly, it could be tonight. We don't know. Thirdly, the only thing that can possibly help you is some Buddhist learning that you have and practice. What would be the natural thing to conclude from that? And that's exactly what death meditation is about. Practice. It should. If you do it, you should just naturally think, well, I better get off my ass and do something. You know?
So you said you get up and you think, I'm going to die today.
That's it. I don't know when. Oh. And the only thing that can help me is my practice. There are within each section three meditations. They're in the little yellow book if you want. I'm not going to go through them. Okay, one more thing and we'll stop. What happens after you die? Now you have to know the four principles of karma. People from the first course already know them. They probably forgot them, as did I.
Four principles of karma?
How karma works.
Yeah.
Oh. If you basically understand that, and if you understand how karma works, you pretty much got the meditation of a small capacity.
That's the things you mentioned before, intention, prepared to do whatever.
No, that's how to commit a full karma. Now we're going to talk about the four principles. No, that's how to commit first. Karma, lepa chewa.
Result.
Sorry, lepa.
Inevitable.
Yeah, and I don't like that translation.
Unavoidable.
Immutable.
You can say anything you want, but what it means is this. What is it? What does it mean, really?
That it's a law. It works invariably.
It doesn't mean that. Explain further and I'll accept
it. It's invariable in the sense that...
Good.
A good action is bound, a virtuous action is bound always to produce good results, and bad actions are always bound to produce bad results.
That's precisely the meaning of
this
first one. It is the only meaning of the first one. Okay. It's fixed in the sense that, in fact, we've been debating down in New Jersey the concept of unreality and reality, and this is actually one of the examples. The classic example of reality is that if you do something harmful, you will have pain. And I can explain it to you perfectly when we study emptiness a little bit. You will believe it. I've explained it. I don't know if I told you a story. I had a Baptist and a Catholic with me in a cabin one day for a whole day. And at the end of the 2 days, without mentioning the word Buddhism and without mentioning the word karma, they accepted these four. And they started doing sojo, purification. So karma is fixed. In the sense that if you do something good, you will get a good result. If you do something bad, you must suffer. Period. What's the second one?
The result.
Le peltilla.
Except about that anger.
Karma gets bigger.
What does it mean?
You do something
The meaning of a karma is a mental seed. And all physical seeds have the quality of expanding exponentially. It's from one walnut that an oak tree grows. And I told the story, people know the story, the famous story where I thought about it was when these huge oak trees where I live, one of them fell down on the temple roof. They sent me up on the roof in a storm with a chainsaw to cut off the top so it wouldn't smash into the temple. And I was so scared my legs were trembling. And I was thinking, you know, when this was an acorn, I should have thrown it in the street. You know, when this tree was an acorn, if I had been there and I could have picked it up and thrown it in the street, I wouldn't be up here now. You know, I had that real thought, you know, it's true. There's no reason to think that karmic seeds act any different from physical seeds. It's from one concept. I remember my boss, you know, we used to sit around and say, what if we... sold five pieces of jewelry to JCPenney's. You know, we were on this level. That's a cost. You know, now we do, I don't know, 30,000 pieces a week. And but the cost comes from the first discussion we ever had. That was a cost. The result is infinitely larger. You know, New York City came from some guy thinking, well, maybe this would be a good place to do. And there's no reason to believe that spiritual things are any different. They're not. One small virtue has incredible results. You know. The results come back, they build on each other and they come back strong. Yeah.
So this is true for bad and good?
Yep.
Related and unrelated, I've never heard this before, but do plants have any life consequence in Buddhism?
According to classical Buddhism, and not maybe some kinds that reach Japan and things like that, according to Orthodox Indian Buddhism, the original text, no, they're not alive. They're building like a crystal builds. And they don't have consciousness, they don't have a mind, and there were Hindu schools that believed they did, and you can find the text where they fight it out.
But animals do?
Yeah.
But plants, no.
No. So we don't have the idea of life divided into plant and animal in Buddhism. Life is animal. Okay. Anyway, what's the next one?
If you haven't done it, that you won't get the consequences.
Is that it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Be to find what the, how do you start the first seed and then eliminate all the bad ones? No?
Like the root of it is not knowing these things, and that's why ignorance is the first link of the 12 links of the Wheel of Fire.
But how do you have ignorance? That's the thing.
You don't meet a teacher, so you don't get any explanation, and you just keep doing it.
Why do the Tibetans say things in reverse with negatives? Why not say, if you do it, you get it, instead of if you don't do it, you don't get it?
You don't understand number one. What did we say about number one?
That good causes follow.
Yeah,
good
this is in terms of content. Uh-huh. This is in terms of what's the opposite of content? Form. This just means good or bad. If you act, you must get a reaction.
The inevitability.
If you don't act, you can't get a reaction.
Oh, you're saying it's never lost, though, is what you're saying.
Yeah. That's a better way to put it, actually.
Yeah, it's never lost unless
you do purification in an effective purification.
Unless you do something about it.
It is possible to purify it.
All those mantras I said for
just... No, it is possible to purify it. And I repeat that the main purification involves not doing it much anymore. If you, getting better is the main purification. Logically, of course.
Yeah. So the main part of purification is the resolution.
It's not only the resolution, but the carrying out that resolution.
So why are you doing the purification? Why can't you say, well, I'm not going to do this anymore, and I'm not going to do it? Wouldn't that be the same thing?
Excuse me.
Just don't do it. And you do
that is purification.
Why you say the prayers and you do the rituals and you do prostrations?
The purpose of the rituals is...
Sanshi Bhurki Jushin Eto Sham Rira Vinshi Nyende Yampadi Sanghe Shindu
This is the end of Class 9.